because at least I got to be a witch for, like, I was, like, the same witch for, like, a few Halloweens when I was a kid, just because Halloween costumes are expensive.
I dressed up as a convict one year. I was really weird costumes. Hobos and convicts, that's all my mom dressed us up as. No wonder I love true crime.
Oh my gosh, she set you up for that. She's like, here, you're gonna be a convict. That's hilarious. I don't think I was ever a criminal. I was a construction worker and a witch. And when the year Mulan came out, I was Mulan. Because everyone loved that movie when that came out. So my mom made the dress, like the little, like her fancy dress that she's wearing when she goes to see the matchmaker. So
nice.
Yeah. And then I was just a witch for, like, a bunch of years. Okay. Sorry. Sidetracked
on our memories of our early Halloweens.
Welcome, everybody, to State of Murder. I'm your host, Selena Cooper.
I'm your other host, Amber Ratzlaff.
And we are in Wisconsin this week. I don't know what Wisconsin's called. What is its nickname?
I just know it as the cheese state. I don't know if it's anything else.
Maybe it's dairy capital of the world.
They're the cheese heads. So Green Bay Packers are there. And so I know they wear like those yellow cheese heads.
Yeah. I knew that. And this is in Wisconsin. That's where that 70s show took place, right? Because weren't they Packers fans?
Yep. Hello, Wisconsin!
Now I need to look at, what's the Wisconsin state? Let me see. What is it called? I always like knowing that. I know we said we were going to start doing it, and then we didn't do it.
Sometimes we're not the best with our follow-through. Oh, well.
We're not. Maybe next time. Once we're going back through, maybe that's how we'll do it. It's known as America's Dairyland,
okay.
I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. I know. I was like, I just know it as the cheese state. So
their motto is forward. That's it? Just one word? Forward.
Well, sometimes that's better than going backwards.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. There you go. Yeah, they're just America's Dairyland is what it is. All right, so we're in the Dairyland today, and I'm lactose intolerant, so I don't appreciate any of Wisconsin's. I guess cheese. I like cheese.
I made the switch.
Yeah, I shouldn't like cheese, though. I am really lactose intolerant, but I should.
That's like my mom. She is, too, and she loves cheese and pretty much anything
cheese
dairy.
Is good. Yeah, cheese is the one thing I haven't been able to switch. I've switched yogurt and butter and milk, but cheese is that one thing I haven't quit yet. That's tough.
It is tough. I haven't tried non-dairy cheeses, like vegan cheese. I'm like, I don't know about that.
They're not terrible. I think it depends on what you're eating them with. Like, would I just eat a piece of, like, vegan cheese like I would regular cheese? No, but, like... The cheese slices that they use for Planet Vegan Burger, shout out to them. If you live in the Fresno area, try them. They're delicious. They're a food truck. But Planet Vegan Burger, the cheese slices that they have on their burgers are pretty good. Like, they're nice and melty, and, like, I don't notice that it's different. And then we've tried the shreds before. The only thing I mean, they don't taste weird. It's just that they don't really melt well.
Yeah.
Like, I think you need a lot higher heat, or, like, you just need to keep them on whatever it is longer, but then you run the risk of burning whatever it is you have them on, so I don't know. Ugh. Yeah, so, I mean, that's something that's still be worked on, I think.
Yeah, everything gets improved, so, but yeah, no, I'm not vegan or vegetarian. I know you're vegetarian, but I'm not.
Yeah, it actually hasn't been that hard. Being vegetarian, not bad. I wonder if any of our listeners are vegetarian or vegan.
I don't know. I could see myself going, but I could do vegetarian before I'd give up carbs. I'll give up
meat. Hell yeah,
way before I'll give up carbs.
yeah carbs till I die, man. I'm never giving up bread.
No
pasta, rice. Nope.
I don't know, exactly.
Can't do it.
So I'm like potatoes, rice. I eat pastas because I don't really like Italian food. So I'm like, man, I could take it or leave it. But like rice and...
But like macaroni and cheese? That's not Italian and it's delicious.
I do love macaroni and cheese. That is true. As long as it doesn't have oregano.
Because that's Italian. I'm hit or miss with the oregano.
Oh, it tastes like dirt. like exactly what I think dirt tastes like. I'm like, ugh. That's why I don't like pizza. Unless it's a weird pizza. Like the Indian pizzas from the curry place. Chicago Curry Pizza or whatever it's called.
Chicago Pizza with a Twist?
Yeah.
Yeah, that place is good.
That place is good.
I hear is it like the curry place or the curry pizza place or something that's supposed to be good too, but I haven't tried that place.
I haven't either.
Yep. So we got off on a little bit of a thing. Sorry, Wisconsin.
Which is weird because I'm not even hungry. like, I just ate.
So I know, good. I just ate too.
But I'm like, oh, let's talk more about food.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Also, still, I'll say this at the beginning and at the end of each episode. Up until the election, we will be encouraging you guys register to vote. Get out there and vote. If you live in a state that, I mean, primaries are coming up left and right here. I think a few states had their primary today, the time of us recording. So. Yeah. Check, make sure you know when you're voting. If you're registering to vote by mail, make sure you check that out. I know a few states, including California, I think we're automatically getting sent a mail-in ballot, whether we are registered to or not. Definitely, it helps keep everyone safe. It helps cut down on the lines at the polling places so we don't have an incident like we did. I believe it was Wisconsin, I think, that had those like 8-hour voting lines. Was it Wisconsin that just recently had those really long lines? I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't remember. Maybe. I mean, I know there's been a couple of places that have not been super successful in their voting.
Yeah. So if you vote by mail, you don't have to worry about waiting in line. Your vote gets counted just the same. And you can do it from the convenience of your home, especially if you're immunocompromised or live with people who are immunocompromised. Definitely take advantage of the vote by mail. But if you are registered to vote, send us an email at stateofmurderpodcast@gmail.com. Send us a Facebook message, an Instagram message, whatever it is. Let us know that you registered to vote and we will shout you out in the next episode. Also, if you've taken the census, if you live in the United States and you've taken the census, definitely hit us up in all those same ways and let us know. And we will also give you a shout out in the next episode because both of those things are very important. Voting is important everywhere you live, but the census specifically if you live in the United States. I don't know if other countries do a census. I'm sure they do. But,
probably.
But definitely very important for our country right now to get the recognition we need because they only do the census every 10 years. So if you don't get counted, your community might not have the services that you want it to have. And if you didn't fill out your census, you only have yourself to blame. Same thing with the voting.
That is true. I know.
You're not happy with it?
No. No, that it is very important. I was just working yesterday and talking to families as they came through our food distribution line that it was important too. And then we were having people fill out the census on the spot. So
nice.
Yeah. So, but it was hot as all get out. Fall, please come quickly. Like, I am ready for fall weather, drinking some hot tea, wearing my hoodie sweatshirts. Mm-hmm. Like, that is my ideal. Please give it to me soon. But I know it won't happen until, like, late October.
Dang. All right. We keep getting off on side tangents. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, guys. So, yeah, let's jump right in. What case do you have for us this week?
So this week I'm going to be sharing with everybody about the Sikh, or people pronounce it Sikh, but I'm pretty sure that they pronounce it Sikh. So the Sikh temple murders that happened in Oak Creek, Wisconsin in 2012. So I don't know if you remember that happening. So it's it was a mass shooting.
Okay.
So totally, I'm going to start worrying about, like, the FBI looking into my, like, web search history right now because I had to kind of investigate and read a lot about, like, alt-right and neo-Nazi groups. And there was this one where I was like, oh, this looks really informative. And I clicked on it. And then I was like, oh, no, this is actually their website. And I was like, back, back, back. Because I just wanted to read about them, not join them. And so I didn't want, like, I'm like, no. So I'm like, please realize that I'm doing a podcast. All my murder and gun history searches and all of these things are, like, just for informative purposes, not that I have a plan for anything. But I think it's really good to be informed on this, especially just kind of understand, not that there's a reason or, like, any justification for their beliefs, because their hate is just ridiculous. But I think it's important, especially now, because there just seems to be even more going on with the alt-right movement and neo-Nazis and everything. So that's kind of the reason why I picked this story. And I'm focusing on the mass shooter, because I just kind of talking about how he became to be, I think, is important to kind of understand that movement. So his name was Wade Michael Page, and he was actually born on Veterans Day, so November 11th, 1971, in Colorado. So in an interview with his stepmother, she stated that she had met him and come into his life when he was about 10 years old, and she remembers him being, like, a really precious little boy, very mellow and soft-spoken. Page had a love of music, and he totally worshipped Stevie Ray Vaughan. So I'm pretty, I know, Selena, every time I hear that name, I'm like, oh, Selena was almost named Stevie.
I was. Fun fact about me, my parents almost named me Stevie for Stevie Ray Vaughan, who's my dad's favorite blues guitarist, and for Stevie Nicks, who my mom really loves, but they just assumed that my grandparents would veto that, so they didn't even tell them, and they just decided to go with a different name.
So, no, when I was reading this, I was just like, oh, Selena's gonna be like, ugh. And I'm like, especially how...
No, don't like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I know, how he turns out to be. Anyway, so Paige actually didn't grow up living with his father, but he lived with his mom, but when he was 13 years old, his mom ended up passing away. I didn't see in any articles why she died, but I know she passed away when he was 13. And instead of going and living with his dad, he actually went and stayed with his grandmother and an aunt. So after Paige graduated from high school, he ended up joining the U.S. Army in April of 1992. He completed his basic training at Fort Sill in Oklahoma. Oklahoma. And then was stationed at Fort Bliss in El Paso, and he then spent a lot of time at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. So there's a reason why I'm just mentioning these, because we'll see in a little bit how some of these places affected him. So when he first started out in the Army, he was learning how to repair the Hawk missile systems. And then he became a psychological operations specialist. So, of course, I was like, what the hell is
that?
I know. I looked. I was telling Selena when I was doing this case, we had to record a little bit later because I had to, like, keep looking, like, side things up that I didn't know about. So I found this on a website that was called an Army Study Guide website. So I don't know. It wasn't actually the U.S. Army. It's like somebody scanned their manual and put it online. So I'm just going with it. So maybe this is
a note to the FBI guys who are listening right now. We are not terrorists. We promise. This is solely for educational purposes.
So I'm on this website, and it stated that the role of the psychological operations specialist is to alter the behavior of foreign populations in a manner consistent with the United States diplomatic, national security, and foreign policy objectives. So, like, and then I don't know how it was in the 90s, but then the position, I think what it was saying it was from more recent times, because it was talking about, like, social media propaganda going out into when they're like stationed abroad, doing, like, bullhorns and, like, announcing things and kind of, I don't know, so maybe some mind manipulation. I don't know. But
that doesn't sound...
I know. I thought it was so interesting. I was like, okay. And then it also said what the requirements were to become one of these people. And I was like, oh, some education? No. You don't need education. You do some basic training and then some extra little classes. So anyway, this sounds pretty impressive. So, like, that, I thought that job title sounded really impressive. And I was like, oh, did he have, like, a master's or something? Mm-mm. So I'm pretty sure that he never really got to use this because he actually never was stationed overseas or with the foreigners at all. He actually never even saw combat. So, I mean, 92 to like when he was in the army in the 90s. So it was kind of right after the first Iraq war. So I'm not sure how much. I don't know. I don't follow the military that well. So in June of 1994, Page ended up being arrested for criminal mischief while he was stationed in El Paso. He was apparently drunk at a bar and started, man, I am not saying the word correctly today. So he started kicking holes in the wall and just kind of messing up the bar. It wasn't like he got in a fight with anybody. It was just, I don't know, some aggression he was taking out. So he was arrested and he ended up pleading guilty to a misdemeanor and spent 180 days on probation. He got 24 hours of community service and then he also had like a $650 fine he had to pay. So according to a number of articles that I read, when Page got stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, that's when he started to form his beliefs about becoming a neo-Nazi. So before that, he didn't really have any racist tendencies. And so like when they were interviewing his stepmom, like a lot of times she was like, no, I was really surprised that that's the way he went. That's not how he was raised. It didn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So he started, you know, kind of just forming those alt-right ideas. Page even stated it himself that when he was at Fort Bragg, he met and was hanging out, I guess, with James Burmeister. And if you haven't heard of him, he was a skinhead paratrooper who in 1995 ended up going and shooting a black couple in North Carolina just because they were black. So he murdered them. So completely racially motivated. It was him and a couple of other guys, actually.
Are these people not being vetted out of the army?
Oh, just wait a second. It gets like crazy.
Oh, right? Gosh.
So this is in the 90s. So he actually was found guilty of the murders and he got a life sentence and then ended up dying in 2007 in prison. So good riddance to bad rubbish. This is another rabbit hole I kind of went down because I started reading about Fort Bragg because apparently in the 90s, it was a hotbed for neo-Nazis. So according to some articles, there the Nazi flag, they would fly the Nazi flag on the base. I was like, excuse me, what? Yeah. So, and then they would blast music encouraging the killing of African-Americans and Jews. So, and I found out that white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and skinhead groups apparently encourage their members to join the military. So it's a big push and it's even happening today. So
yeah, that makes sense. But you would think that the army knowing this would be like,
so they are better at it now. So if you read there is some, well, I don't know if now, but in Obama's administration, they were working on it. I don't know what's going on now. The reason why they want them to join is that they are preparing for what they call Rahoa, which is short for the Racial Holy War. So they're all getting ready. So they want that military combat experience so that they're prepared. And so they have all the training for survival and ammunition and all of that.
That's insane. And terrifying.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. So I got a lot of the information on Fort Bragg and the neo-Nazi groups from the Southern Poverty League. And the Southern Poverty League, their job since 1990 has been to monitor hate groups and other extremists throughout the United States and expose their activities to public, media, and then also law enforcement. So there's some good guys. So I tend to like that kind of group, I believe. When I accidentally went down the neo, onto the neo, alt-right websites, I was like, So by 1998, Page was actually given a general discharge. I'm kind of surprised it wasn't a dishonorable discharge, but it was just a general discharge. And I remember us talking about how somebody else got I don't remember who was. Was it in Texas?
I believe it was Texas. It was my case where he got a general discharge versus an honorable discharge.
Yeah.
Which eliminated him from, it prevents the housing, the GI stuff.
Yeah.
The GI Bill, education and housing. Yeah.
So, however, he, what was his name?
Joe Torres, yeah.
Joe Torres. He deserved probably an honorable discharge to get, like, all of those things. Paige, obviously, definitely did not. So he apparently was found drunk while on duty, and then also he kept going AWOL, so he was absent without leave. And so everything kind of culminated. It seems like he kind of had a drinking problem. And so, like, everything culminated, and they discharged him from the Army. So in 2000, he ended up becoming a member of the Hammerskins. Do you know what that is? Mm-mm. Okay, I didn't either. Another rabbit hole Amber goes down. So, of course, I looked it up. And so the Hammerskins are a white supremacist group, and their primary focus is promoting their propaganda and hate message through white power rock music. So,
no.
Nothing I listen to, that's for damn sure.
That's terrible.
So remember how I mentioned that Paige loves Stevie Ray Vaughan? Well, he always wanted to become a musician, and so he became a bass guitarist for a couple of groups. First was 13 Knots, and then he moved on to the band Definite Hate. And then he finally formed his own group in 2005, called End Apathy. So he named it that because he wanted to end white people's apathy so that they would start becoming more accepting of the race war. And so it was like, I'm going to end apathy with the white people. No, sir. No. So the other thing that was really
ridiculous.
I know. I'm like, oh, God. And then, like, you read some of his, I'm not quoting any of his lyrics because I don't, it's just hate speech. But I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, this fucker. So what's really amazing is that during this time, he was actually being interviewed by a professor from the University of Nebraska at Omaha, by a guy named Pete Simme. So he was actually writing his PhD thesis on white supremacist groups, which ended up leading to a book he wrote. Anyway, he ended up interviewing Paige over 3 years. He even ended up sharing a room with him at some sort of white supremacist rally. So he got to know him fairly well. He was actually, I think it's in one of the articles I read, it talked about how Simme was kind of surprised that he committed the mass murder. Because, yes, well, he thought he was kind of full of hot air. So, like, talking all this hate speech but not actually doing anything. But,
yeah.
So a lot of the information we get of Paige's ideas and ideals are from Simme and his interviews. So he's the one that wrote about Paige saying that it was Fort Bragg that started forming his ideology. And then he also stated that Paige really started talking about, because he was interviewing him from like 2000 to 2003. So, you know, what happened in 2001 was, of course, 9/11. And that really affected Paige. He actually got a 9/11 tattoo on his arm. And so he kept telling Simme that he wanted to bomb the entire Middle East to get rid of all of them. He would refer to them as towel heads and just all these derogatory terms. I know, it's just gross. So then he also would talk about how he hated the Jewish people, stating that in regards to the Holocaust, that they all had it coming. So, like, that the Holocaust, like, they brought it upon themselves, kind of.
Wow.
I know. I'm like, oh, my God.
This guy is a piece of work.
And it's amazing how just his time. So, like, he was in Fort Bragg for just, like, 3 or 4 years. And that has completely changed, like, his whole up, like, whatever he was brought up to believe, everything changed. And this, just staying in this one military base and who he interacted with, kind of changed his ideals. But I also think it's because I think that sometimes with these alt-right people, they blame everybody else for their shortcomings or their faults, so that they, you know, and I honestly think that's a lot of what it is. So if they're not successful, if they, you know, everything bad happens to them, then this, they're, the reason is because of these races. I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I think you and I are in the same place on some of the reasons why they feel the way they do. So during this time, Paige wasn't only on Simi's radar with his interviews. He also started being watched by the Southern Poverty League. So remember, they're the organization that watches for terrorism and stuff like that. And so the reason why is because he was doing so much propaganda for them with his Hammerskin music. So his white power rock, whatever. So by 2011, Paige actually earned his patch with the Hammerskins. So I don't know if this is like kind of... The only time I ever think of earning patches is either from watching Sons of Anarchy, and, like, they're patched in, or Boy Scouts. So is this the alt-right Boy Scouts? Probably not, but that's what I think of. So in 2011... He actually ended up, so he'd been living, he kind of floated around a little bit. So he was in Colorado in 2000s. He actually came to the city of Orange in California, I guess. I don't know if it still is, but I guess there was a big Nazi alt-right group there. I don't know if that's the case anymore. I actually didn't look that up to see. And then he moved back to North Carolina. So while he was in North Carolina in 2011, he had bought a house a couple years ago before that, and it actually got foreclosed on, and so he had to leave. And so he ended up moving in with his girlfriend in Milwaukee. Normally, I wouldn't mention her name because, you know, she had nothing to do with anything that's going to occur. But she also seemed a little bit on the alt-right side and loved posting all these things on Hammerskin message boards and everything. So her name was Misty Cook. So Misty Cook. If you're out there, you're probably not listening to our podcast because you are not liking what we're talking about. Now, according to Paige's neighbors, Paige and Cook actually ended up breaking up in June of 2012. And his neighbor stated that he didn't seem too upset about the breakup, but just a little bit sad. Paige stopped showing up for work at this time, and he was also behind on his rent. Really, like, his neighbors identified him kind of as a loner who kept to himself. And there was one neighbor in particular that actually did spend time talking to him. So this is the same neighbor that talked about the breakup. And he said that Paige always would talk to him about how he was really upset about 9/11 and that he joined the army after 9/11, which we all know that's not true because he joined the army in 1992 and he wasn't even in the army in 2001. So he was lying about that. And then he would also talk about how he was stationed overseas and he saw all this combat. And there was like, he would be standing there and his fellow soldiers would just fall to the ground dead from being shot and how it just changed him and everything. But it's like, this is all bullshit. So he's just, I don't know what he got out of that, but he was lying.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, maybe he just wanted to sound more important than he is. I don't know.
I don't know, maybe he's like that crazy lady who said that she was at 9/11 and she wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he wants that attention. The woman who wasn't there is that documentary, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, where she just, like, told everyone. It might be an intention thing. Like, he just wants people paying attention to him.
Definitely.
Look at what I went through.
Yeah, I can see that. So, on July 28th of 2012, Paige ended up going into the Shooter Shop, which was a local gun shop. It was known for having the best guns around, the most diverse guns. He wanted to purchase a handgun. So, the owner ran a background check, and Paige passed and was able to purchase a Springfield Armory XDM. So I looked that up because, you know, we're not great with the guns around here. So I actually looked it up to see what it looked like. And it looks exactly what you would think like a regular handgun like a policeman would have or whatever. So it was a 9mm, I believe. And so on the Springfield Armory website, this is how it described the gun. And I just thought it was funny. So it was apparently renowned for its accuracy, reliability, and shootability. Which, is shootability a word?
I don't think that's a word. What does that even mean? Like, is it easy to shoot? Does it go far?
I don't know.
What is shootability?
Don't all guns have shootability?
Yeah, Yeah, I don't know.
Along with purchasing this awesome shootability gun, he ended up buying 3 19-round ammunition magazines. So he couldn't take the gun that day or something. I don't know. I don't know what the gun regulations are for, like, after you pass a background check. But he ended up coming back 2 days later to pick up the gun and do some target practice. So the owner talked about how their vetting process, I don't know, for people. And so he was like, he seemed normal. He wasn't under the influence. He wasn't a skinhead. He didn't notice any tattoos that were bad, which is probably not true because Paige was all tatted up with all sorts of alt-right. So we've talked about alt-right tattoos before. So he had the number 14 for the bullshit Mein Kampf shit. And he had the 9/11 tattoo, which I'm not saying that's necessarily alt-right. I don't know. But he had tattoos, but either way, the owner stated that he appeared very normal. So no questions. He was fine.
That's leaving too much to chance.
I know. I'm super for stronger gun laws. So whatever.
Yeah.
So just down the block from Paige's ex-girlfriend Cook's work was the local Sikh temple. So when he would go pick her up, I'm guessing he would see guys in turbans and, you know, just was kind of drawn to that. I did read one article, and so I try to do the same thing as you. I want to find stuff that's corroborated in, like, a number of places, but one article did mention that he had actually stopped into the Sikh temple a couple of times and talked to people and kind of got the lay of the land. I don't know if that's true or not. It mentioned it in only one article, but if that's true, okay. So on Sundays at the Sikh temple, the Sikh would come together to worship just like many other religions do on Sundays. They would sing and pray, and afterwards they would serve a big meal. And I don't know if everybody knows, we do have a good Sikh community in Fresno, but a lot of times the temples allow anybody to come eat with them. So it's kind of a time for fellowship and just, like, spending time together. And so every Sunday they usually do that. So on Sunday, August 5th, 2012, Paige arrived at the temple and parked his car in the parking lot. He ended up being greeted by 2 men who had also just arrived to worship that day. So I in articles, it walked through the steps of what happened, but a lot of times it didn't name exactly who was shot when and where. So sometimes I'll have names and sometimes I won't, but I'll have all of the victims' names at the end, except for there are some of the people who were shot did survive. So, and they weren't named in any article I could see. So just so we're clear. So I'm not going to name everybody. Sorry, I tried to look a lot of places and I just didn't find a lot about it. Mm-hmm. So these 2 guys welcomed him. He walked up to them and then just ended up shooting them both in the parking lot. I read in another article that 2 children were actually kind of by the front door and they saw him shoot the 2 gentlemen. And so they ended up running inside and letting people know that there was a shooter on their premises. Paige then continued inside the building where he encountered, and I'm sorry, I might pronounce some of these names wrong, and I've listened to them, but it's just, you know, names are hard to pronounce sometimes. So Paramajit Kaur. So she was on the floor praying and he ended up shooting and killing her. He then continued on and he came across a man who was on the phone. Many believe that he was actually on the phone with the police and he ends up being shot. I don't think that the guy that was on the phone with the police died. So there wasn't a lot of time in between. So the kids ran in, somebody got on the phone and called the police. So then he continues walking through the temple and he ends up shooting another man. And then he walks to where a number of people have hidden. So everybody's hiding at this point. Everybody's.
Yeah, if you can't get out.
Yeah. So everybody was hiding behind in one room behind a door. And he opened the door and a guy, I guess, kind of was peeking around and he ended up shooting that man in the eye. And so he passed away. Once the door was completely opened, he encountered Sawant Singh Kalika, who was actually the founder of the temple. And apparently Kalika, there were a whole bunch of women and then some other people in that room. And Kalika ended up actually walking up to Paige and stating that he didn't have, please, you don't have to do this. And was starting to, like, try to reason with him. But in response, Paige ended up shooting a different man in the stomach. So he didn't shoot Kalika at that point. And then I guess this guy, the guy who was shot in the stomach, and so he's not named because he was a survivor. He ended up actually running out of the room and getting out of the temple and went next door and ended up collapsing on the temple's neighbor's lawn. And it just happened to be that the person who lived there was a firefighter. And so he administered like some triage and some first aid. And that's the reason why this guy probably survived, is because it just happened to be a firefighter who was trained in that kind of thing. So that's pretty lucky. Wow. So the firefighter actually took him straight to the hospital. So I think they actually left before the police even arrived. Paige ends up, after the guy left the room, Paige actually ends up shooting Kalika, and he dies kind of protecting all of his, I'm going to call them parishioners. I don't know if that's what they call them, but that's what we call people that attend church. Mm-hmm. Paige then started to walk towards the kitchen. And remember how I talked about how they prepare a meal and serve it? So most of the women were actually in the kitchen preparing the meal when this happened. And so they had all started hiding in the pantry while this was all going on. But two of the women noticed that they thought that something was going to catch fire on the stove. And so they went out of the pantry to go turn off the stoves. And that's when they saw Paige, and he ended up shooting at them through the door. But he didn't hit them. And so the women quickly ran back into the pantry, and they were sure he was going to come in. And all of a sudden, like, the shooting just stopped. They didn't hear anything, and they didn't know really what happened. The reason for the shooting stopping is that the police actually had arrived. So around 10:25 a.m., the police dispatcher received a distress call from inside the temple. And when the first officer, Brian Murphy, arrived on the scene, so he actually only took him 2 minutes to get to the scene. So I don't know if he was close by or how he got there so quickly, but he arrived at 10:27. So I'm sure just a couple minutes after all the shooting really started.
Yeah, that's a good response time. I think we talked about that again with my school shooting stories. The police responded within like 4 minutes.
Yeah. So because could you imagine how much worse, like if he had gotten into the kitchen and that's where all the women and like a lot of the kids and everything were hiding. So, So when Brian Murphy arrived on the scene, he got out of his vehicle and noticed the two victims in the parking lot with all of the blood. So he was starting to go help them when all of a sudden he looked up and he saw this white man in a white shirt walking towards him. So when witnesses called 911, they had identified the shooter as a big, bald Caucasian, which this says bald. And I'm like, didn't the freaking gun shop owner make a point of saying that he wasn't a skinhead? But anyway, so it was a bald Caucasian with glasses that was doing the shooting. So Murphy shouted out for Paige to stop. He was like, stop, police. Instead, Paige started firing at Officer Murphy. So Officer Murphy, and so Murphy actually returned fire, except for his shots didn't hit Paige, but Paige's shot hit him. So Murphy was actually shot in the neck. So he started kind of scramble to get behind the door of his car. He was kind of lying on the ground. And so he gave an account. So he actually survives.
Okay.
So he gave an account of what happened. So he was talking, he said that, that when he got down behind the car for cover, he started to kind of look under on the ground, kind of looking underneath the vehicle, but he couldn't see Murphy. He didn't know where he couldn't see Paige. So he didn't know where he was coming from. But then all of a sudden he heard a boom, boom, boom. And Paige had actually come up behind Murphy and started shooting him. So the first shot his thumb off. Started spraying blood. And then he thought that Paige had stopped shooting, but actually Paige just had been reloading his gun. And so then he started shooting Murphy again, and Murphy was actually shot a total of 14 times. In one of the articles I was reading, they said that there was 26 shells around him. So he probably shot at him more than 14 times, and just 14 bullets hit. So, I know. I can't believe he survived. It's crazy. So help was on its way because more police officers ended up coming, and they started shooting at Paige, and Paige was actually shot in the stomach. And it sounds like he kind of ran away and went to go hide a little bit. And So the police, other police officers came and were trying to help Murphy. And Murphy was actually like, no, don't worry about me. Go help all of the other people. The other people need more help, which I don't. He was shot 14 times. So this is actually, I mean, we've talked a lot about like not good cop stories and bad police officers. So this is actually a police officer that seems to be really like brave and responded appropriately and was very thoughtful in how he was. So give a shout out to Officer Murphy. So after Paige was shot in the stomach, they went after him and the police were doing a lot of gunfire. So at first they thought that they had killed Paige. So Paige ends up dying. But upon investigation, it was actually found out that Paige, after the gunfight, had ended up shooting himself in the head. So the police didn't actually kill him. He committed suicide.
Coward.
I know. By the time Paige's killing spree was over, six Sikh lost their lives. So Sita Singh, Ranjit Singh, Prakash Singh, Paramjit Kaur, Suvig Singh and Satwant Singh Kalika. So there were the two others that survived. So the guy who ran out, and then I think it was the guy on the phone that all survived, I believe. It was kind of confusing because they didn't have a lot of their names, and so you kind of just had to figure it out. And then after this, the Sikh population actually honored and awarded Officer Murphy. So their local temple gave him like $10,000, and then the Sikh community around the United States and I think the world ended up raising $100,000 in thanks for his quick response. So they were, and they just really praised him for coming and saving as many as he did and, you know, just being there so quickly.
Yeah.
So obviously, because the shooter was committed suicide, there wasn't a lot of investigation needed as they knew who had done it. However, there were a lot of questions on why he targeted the Sikh community. So a lot of people believe that he actually thought they were Muslims. And I think that happens a lot. And not like it's a bad thing to be confused for one or the other, but the Sikh community, especially after 9/11, had a lot of hate against them because a lot of people thought they were Muslims when actually they are not. Most of them come from India. And so that kind of, I think played a part in it. So the FBI investigated it as an act of terrorism. And obviously, I mean, that's what it was, domestic terrorism. The FBI came to the conclusion that nobody else was involved. They did kind of look into the ex-girlfriend because I think one of her guns was found on him. So a gun she owned, but she was a felon, so she wasn't supposed to own a gun. And so she was arrested for that, but she had nothing else to do with it. So that is the story of, we'll say Officer Murphy, because he was really brave and survived. And then Wade Michael Page and the Sikh Temple murders.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. No, that's definitely good to see that they classified it as terrorism. I think a lot of times they're hesitant to say terrorism when the shooter is a white guy. Then it's more of like, oh, he just had mental health issues, he wasn't a terrorist. And I'm like, no, it's still terrorism.
Oh, absolutely.
But that was really great that the officer responded so quickly and they were able to save you. And also, too, like, quick thinking of those kids to not, like, freeze or run the other way. They were, like, trying to save everybody. Absolutely. So that's also, too, the fact that most people were able to hide because of the kids' warning is also really great.
Yeah. Because even 30 seconds gives people, okay. Because I don't know if I would hear gunshots, I don't know if I necessarily would assume, and it was outside, that it was coming to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Well, and a lot of times, too, you try to rationalize them. You're like, oh, it's fireworks, or it's the car backfiring, or it's your brain will rationalize, like, because, oh, that can't be happening to me or where I'm at. And so, definitely, like, quick thinking of those kids to be like, nope, we're going to go let everybody know. We're going to hide. And that's great.
Yeah.
Because it would be really tragic to imagine, like, how many more people would have been shot if they had just been out doing what they were regularly doing.
Yeah, you know? Or if they had, if his timing had been different and they had all been at prayers in the, like, main room, like, how many more would have been available? But, yeah, it was, yeah. I don't know if he knew what time they were worshiping or what their worship was like. That's why I kind of questioned. But he did seem to kind of know where he was going. So he probably had been in the building.
Yeah. That's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it is.
Also, it sucks that he killed himself and doesn't get to, like, I mean, I know he's dead, but it's also, like, you don't get that justice. Of, yeah. Like, no, you have to be locked in prison and think about what you did for the rest mm-hmm. of your life.
Well, and then
although they probably would have put him on death row anyway.
Yeah. It also goes to, like, when you think about it, because he was on this kind of watch. Like, people, like, he was on people's radar and for his mm-hmm. ideology. And so it kind of goes to, you know, the question comes, like, can, like, I know we can't, like, convict or anything on people's thoughts, but I know that, like, with school shootings, that there is some intervention done. Like, if somebody says they're going to go do it or anything, they, like, go and, like, meet with the kid. And I don't know. Like, I just, that's...
No, I think that there should be something where if you're on some type of watch list, like, get some type of social worker involved or, like, because just being on a watch list... then you, what when a shooting happens you're like mm-hmm. oh guess we were right, like no, but if you send somebody out to like address mental health issues or talk to them about different things or what's going on, why are they doing it, like it might help prevent a lot of these.
Yeah.
And so I definitely think there should be some, like, obviously we're not going full-blown Minority Report and arresting people before they commit a crime.
But, I mean, there's some interventions and, like, trying to figure out why the hate is and, like, maybe some education. I don't know. Like, it's just really scary because there's just so much, like, that we see now with the alt-right going on. And I just, it's really terrifying, like, what could possibly happen and how can we prevent stuff from happening. I mean, you know, you have, like, Timothy McVeigh with the Oklahoma City bombing. You just have all these... And it did talk about Paige talking about Timothy McVeigh and kind of looking up to him. So mm-hmm. I don't, you know, it just.
Yeah. But I think mental health is really a good place to start for most mm-hmm. of it. But I also think like with like neo-Nazi type stuff, because I watched a show, I can't remember what it was called, but it was this British guy, but he was, I want to say he was of Middle Eastern descent. But he came to somewhere in America. He went to somewhere in the South, I think. And he met with this guy who was a neo-Nazi. Who, like, straight up, like, mm-hmm. the little eagle statue on his house. Like, Nazi flags everywhere. Like, his kids are all dressed up in, like, Confederate Nazi, all kinds of stuff. And, but he was talking to this guy. And as you're, like, because he talked to a few people. And, like, throughout the episode, like... The main guy that he talked to was actually, like, welcoming and, like, talked to him and, like, was open to him, which is really surprising because he's this brown-skinned English dude. And, like, he was talking to him and real open. And you got the impression that, like, he just felt like he didn't belong anywhere. And this was a place that welcomes kind of anybody who's willing to open themselves up to hating other people.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, a lot of it, I think, it's almost like a cult. Like, you're just getting people who don't belong or who feel like they don't belong. And you're saying, yeah, here, we'll welcome you. You just have to do all of these crazy things or believe these crazy things. And that's really what I think it is. Like, a lot of it, like, some of it is, like, passed down hate. But others, I think it's just, like, lost souls who just... that, yeah, like you said, if they have some type of intervention or some type of help, then they won't go that way.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what show. It was a show on Hulu, but it was interesting because then they tried to take him to a rally, and the rally people were like, no, you can't go over there. Like a KKK rally, and they were like, no, he can't film and, like, watch. But, like, the guys forgot they were mic'd, and so they went, and so they're, like, way off, and they're listening to them talk. Of, like, all this racist stuff, and they're at this case, like, talking about him.
Oh, God.
And he was just getting pissed, and he was trying to, like, not get mad.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, it was a whole thing. But it was an interesting, like, take on the whole thing. But yeah, but that's where I started to think, like, yeah, it's kind of like a cult. Like, they're just people that don't belong.
Yeah, they pick out the vulnerable people. Mm-hmm. So, very true. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. So, what's your story this week?
So, mine is going to be a little bit shorter, but I still thought it was interesting. I don't know why I had such a hard time trying to find a case in Wisconsin that really stood out to me. I felt like if you're looking up true crime in Wisconsin, it kept giving me things like making a murderer, which I don't know if that took place in Wisconsin. And I guess there's a... Okay, so kept bringing up that, and then I guess they're creating some new true crime series about this family that was murdered. I didn't look up who it was because I was like, well, I can't use them for the podcast because they're... sound a little bit, or they're about to be more well-known.
Yeah.
So, I found this one. It's a case from 1973, and it's about the Halloween killer. And one, the name stuck out to me because Halloween, for anyone who doesn't know, is my absolute favorite holiday. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Halloween. You can have Christmas. You could take Thanksgiving. I'll be fine with Halloween. Like, that's my jam. But, anyway... Halloween 1973 was just an average holiday for Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Kids were excited for trick-or-treating that night, and the town was engulfed in the Halloween spirit. That night, 9-year-old Lisa French was excited to head out dressed as a butterfly, but the weather was really cold, so her mom insisted on a different costume to help her stay warm, as moms do. And Lisa dressed up instead as a hobo. So I'm like, aw, like she went from a butterfly to a hobo.
Dude, I totally dressed up many a Halloween when I was little as a hobo.
So yeah, she had on taped up pants and a little green vest and like, so went all dressed so she could be warmer, which I get.
I think like, that's super cute.
My mom always wanted us to dress warmer. Yeah. But then if you're hoping to be a butterfly, I know. And then you're
for
a
poor
hobo,
little girl.
I know. So Lisa ate dinner and around 6 p.m. went happily along her way to trick-or-treat alone. She was supposed to go with a friend to the pumpkin place, which is basically like this safe space, like a party that some parents in the area had put together for their kids. But her friend got in trouble and wasn't allowed to go out that night. And I'm like, damn, what did that little girl do to get in trouble so bad that her mom was like, you can't trick-or-treat on Halloween? Like, that's a messed up punishment.
That is. That is. That's harsh, man.
Like, Halloween only comes once. It's not like, oh, you can play with your friend another time. It's like, no, you can really only trick-or-treat right now.
That's like parents who, like, get mad at their kids and they're like, we're gonna take away Christmas, and then actually doing it. Like, dang.
I know. Jeez. So, Lisa first went to her teacher's house who lived in the area and then moved on to a classmate's house and got candy from both houses. The third house she made it to was that of her former neighbor, Gerald Turner Jr., and this would be the last house that Lisa made it to that night. So, I'm going to give you some backstory on Turner. Turner, who was in his mid-20s, had once shared a duplex with the French family. He was a machinist for the Soo Line Railroad. And he was divorced and had two kids, including a young baby, which I'm like, dang, mid-20s.
I know, I was just thinking that. Okay. But 70s.
It's the 70s.
Okay. Yep.
I like how that's how we justify it. It was
the 70s.
So Lisa was used to talking to him, and because she had used to stop by his house to play with his young baby and just like hang out. And so that night she didn't find it strange at all that he invited her in. Once inside, however, things took a turn for the worst. Turner led Lisa back into his bedroom and sexually assaulted her.
And how old, not that it matters, but because it's a kid anyway, no matter what, but how old was Lisa?
She was 9.
Oh God, okay.
I know, she's little. Which also, I'm like, I know it was the 70s, and it was a different time, and this was like a safe town and all that, but... Like, don't send your 9-year-old trick-or-treating alone. Mm-hmm. But I guess in hindsight now, like, we can look at it because it's like, my parents never let us go trick-or-treating alone. Like, until I was a teenager with a whole group of friends.
Mine did. We'd go as a group, but we didn't have adults with us. No. And that was in Seattle,
my last year,
which is a big city.
No, my last year trick-or-treating, I think I was 13 was mm-hmm. last year I went trick-or-treating, and it was just a bunch of friends, and that was the only time I think I had gone alone. Other than that, there was always, like, an adult yeah. around. I don't know. My mom was a super protective parent. She would, like, check our candy and all that stuff. Oh. And I'm like, I just want to eat it. I really don't care if I get poisoned.
Maybe that's the difference between, like, a 90s baby and an 80s baby. Like,
your mom was like, go do what you want.
Go do it. Be free. Have fun, kids. Different times.
Yeah, different times, different parenting styles. So during the course of this assault, Turner said that Lisa became unconscious. After Lisa passed out, he claims that he tried to resuscitate her, but was interrupted when his girlfriend Arlene arrived back at home with their young daughters. Remember, he's a baby. After visiting the pumpkin place, and they arrived back at the house at 7:15. So they were in the place where Lisa was originally supposed to go, like with her friend.
Yeah.
So Turner closed the door to the bedroom and told Arlene that he wasn't feeling well and went back to the room to lay down. So Turner would come in and out of the bedroom a few times until Arlene left the house again to go visit her mother, which I think is really weird. Like, why wouldn't you just say you don't... Maybe he was coming out to, like, prevent her from coming in to, like, check on him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So obviously at this point, like, because no one was trying to resuscitate Lisa, she died.
Yeah.
And so... As soon as Arlene left to go visit her mom, Turner wasted no time in trying to dispose of the body of Lisa French. He placed her naked body in one garbage bag and placed her clothes in another. He then drove 4 miles outside to the town of Taycheta, I think is how you say it. It's spelled really weird. It's Taycheedah. Taycheta is the best thing to come up with. And dumped her body and clothing in a farm field. Which, I'm like, what was the point of putting it in two separate bags if you were just going to dump them in the same place? I'm so confused.
He probably wasn't thinking it through. I don't know.
No, he's a jackass, so probably not. So as time went by and Lisa was still not home from trick-or-treating, her mom and stepfather were becoming increasingly worried. They started asking around if anyone had seen her, and soon families in the neighborhood started calling around, leaving porch lights on, putting signs in their windows, which, props, like, that's an amazing neighborhood that, like, they just started asking around, and the neighbors are, like, full on, like, let's find this child mode, so that's great. The police were called and started an all-night search for Lisa, which is also great, because sometimes when kids go missing, they, like, have you wait, so this is great. So they started an all-night search for Lisa, and they couldn't find a sign of her anywhere. As soon as it became dusk, they kind of called it and were going to reconvene in the morning. Mm-hmm. So the next day, or not dusk, I said dusk, I meant dawn. The next day, 5,000 volunteers made their way through the town looking for Lisa everywhere in an amazing display of community love and support. Searches took place on foot, in cars, on horseback, and even private planes. Pulled out, like, people were just flying their planes around to look for her in this town and the surrounding towns. Gas stations even gave out 25 free gallons of gas to people searching Fond du Lac and the surrounding towns. Still, the searches turned up nothing. Finally, on the morning of November 3rd, so this would be 3 days later, a farmer driving his tractor found 2 trash bags off of a country road. Inside, he found Lisa. After an autopsy report, it would be discovered that she died of shock during the attack and not of any type of asphyxiation, which is so horrible. But I really hope that meant that she, like, went very quickly and, like, didn't have to suffer.
Wow. Like, that's just so crazy, just dying from shock.
Yeah. Well, that has to be terrifying.
Oh, like, absolutely.
You know this person. And then something that I'm sure she's never even, like, thought about in her, like, mm-hmm. 9 years old.
Oh, yeah. Even,
like, there's nothing you would have seen on TV or heard of, mm-hmm. like, and this man starts abusing you like that. So police began their questioning, searching for the person who did this, as the town began to mourn. Police started to set their sights on Turner after investigators noticed an irregularity in his statement. On August 9th, 1974, almost a year after Lisa's murder, they brought Turner in for another round of questioning. Turner confessed, and even though he would later recant and claim innocence, it wouldn't matter. the judge would make special note of his lack of remorse during trial, and he would be found guilty. Yeah, because the judge was like, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Like, you obviously...
Yeah, like, fuck you. You're the worst of the worst. Like...
Yeah.
It's sad when you almost have, like, a, like, level degrees of, like, how terrible murder is. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, okay, that murder mm-hmm. happened. Okay. And then there's other murders that you're just like, oh, my God. And it, and anytime a kid is involved, I think you always feel that. But then, like, a kid sexually assaulted and murdered mm-hmm. is just, like, another whole level. It's just like, oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. And even too, like, sexually assaulted by someone that she trusted, mm-hmm. I think even buries it even further. Because then it's like, I mean, she went over to this guy's house, she hung out with his kids, like, and he still did this. It's just, people are the fucking worst. So, Turner was found guilty and sentenced to 38 and a half years in prison. And that's this it? Is where it gets real upsetting. Yeah. Well, it gets worse.
Oh, God.
In 1992... Turner would be released on parole after just 17 years of being behind bars. But the following year, he would return to prison because the state cited a faulty release formula and he wasn't supposed to get out in 1992.
Well, I hope not.
And so, yeah, so they, but I don't think he was really supposed to be in there that much longer. But they let him in, or they put him back in prison. And this led to a heated legal battle in which Turner was ultimately released in 1998. To a halfway house in Madison, Wisconsin. Just 5 years later, however, he would return to prison after being found in possession of child pornographic images and videos, which is the clear violation of parole.
Yes.
Also, too, I forgot to mention it and add it when I was talking about the trial, but, like, a lot of his former girlfriends and I think his ex-wife, they all came forward and were like, no, he was super abusive, like, when... we were in a relationship with it. So it was all like these warning signs mm-hmm. like we're adding up. And I want to say that he had sexually assaulted one of his former girlfriends or his wife or something like that. So yeah. There was like a pattern.
Yeah.
And the fact that that alone, like he still didn't have to serve his full sentence and was eligible for parole is ridiculous. But anyway, so he went back to prison just 5 years later. This sentence was for 15 years and has started a debate over whether or not he should be released again because his 15 years is coming up. So I believe he's supposed to be at, what is that, 5 years from 1998 is
2003
plus 15 would be 2018. So he was supposed to, there was a debate there because it was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
If he should be released or if authorities can have him committed as a sexually dangerous person and, like, lock him up in a mental health facility for the rest of his life.
Mm.
A date has finally been set to hear the arguments for that. So I believe he's still in prison because of they're just, like, waiting to figure it out.
Okay.
But a date has finally been set and a judge will hear arguments on October 29th, just 2 days before the 47th anniversary of Lisa's murder. To decide whether Turner is a free man or committed to a mental health facility for the rest of his life. And so this is coming up on this October, mm-hmm. like in 2020. So they will determine. So this sparked a lot of debate again in the community of like, are we going to be safe and how do we fight this? So a lot of pushback on all of this. In my opinion, I think definitely commit this man to I believe he belongs in prison, but
he should be in prison for the rest of his life because he murdered a 9-year-old girl. Like, that is mm-hmm. I mean, well, did he that's because now you're like, what was he found guilty of? Like, do you know what level of murder he was found guilty of when it came to
My guess would be some type of like
second degree or manslaughter. Or
second degree. Because it doesn't seem like he intended to kill her. Yeah,
because
just happened.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you sexually assaulted a child so badly she went into shock and died. That's murder.
Yeah.
Regardless, you should be put away.
I mean, it was obviously premeditated to freaking assault her. Ugh. Gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and the fact even, too, like, that he tried to deny it, and he tried to say, like, he... like, because in his first interview with the police, he had tried to say, like, oh, I don't remember seeing her, she didn't come here, but I think someone saw her go to that house, so it was like, no, obviously she was here. Mm-hmm. That would have been the path she followed.
Yeah.
Also, too, as for the city of Fond du Lac, after Turner was placed behind bars the first time, new laws were passed about Halloween. Children were allowed to trick-or-treat the Sunday before Halloween from 3:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. supervised by parents. That's the only time they were allowed to trick-or-treat for Halloween.
Hmm.
Other cities in Wisconsin implemented similar laws, varying from city to city, with Milwaukee having strict rules. And the reason I bring up Milwaukee is because it's a big city in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
They only allow trick-or-treating from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. the Sunday before Halloween, which is insane. Like, oh my goodness. Like, the first off, it's a Sunday, so that's weird.
That is, because why wouldn't you pick a Saturday? Well, I guess they're not doing it late, so who cares?
Yeah, but either way, you know, like, why is Sunday? That just seems weird. And, yeah, and it's just so unfortunate because I did get to watch, like, a news thing. I think it was from a year or two ago where they were talking to the townspeople of, like, how they felt about it. Because this really shook up this very safe town, right? And they just didn't kind of know what to do about everything. And they were, like, generally fearful of, like, okay, yeah, no, this is a good idea. Yeah, we can't have the kids out and they have to be supervised all the time. But now, talking to the parents, they're kind of like, yeah, I think we should kind of loosen up. I mean, the parents are going with them anyway. It should be a Halloween night thing again. But can you imagine, like, growing up in Wisconsin and you're always celebrating Halloween on the Sunday before and then you move away and it's like, wait, everyone's celebrating Halloween on Halloween? Like,
although
that'd be trippy.
I've always thought that, like, for trick-or-treating, like, when Halloween falls on a school night, like, that sucks. And I'm always like, do it that next Saturday or Friday night.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm fine if trick-or-treaters come, like, the Saturday before, like, if they're doing mm-hmm. it before because Halloween lands on, like, a Monday or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, most do it on
Halloween,
which I don't mind. I mean, no. I still get a pretty good amount of trick-or-treaters, which I like getting trick-or-treaters to my house. I like passing out candy and seeing all their cute little costumes.
I do too. I love it, but I'm always working Halloween day or Halloween night because I have to do trunk or treat mm-hmm. for our work.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, so that was the story of little Lisa French and the tragedy. I mean, I just feel so bad. Like, she was so excited
poor
about
baby.
Halloween, and then her friend had to go and get in trouble, and it changed. And then I just keep thinking, like, why didn't her parents, like, take her to the pumpkin place?
Yeah.
Like, they were just at home eating dinner.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs.
Like, I'm obviously not blaming the parents. No. I just think, like, it's just such a tragedy.
It
and
is.
It's douchebag neighbor.
Yeah. That's just, ugh.
But then I think a lot of that fear compounded, too, because then all of these urban legends that started coming out, right? Like, you have, and the legends that I think me and you grew up with of, like, they're putting razor blades in the candy, and I remember after, like, 9/11, it was like, there's anthrax in all of the Halloween candy. And I'm like, who cares enough to kill a bunch of little kids in Fresno, California?
Yeah.
Who cares enough about us?
Well, I don't remember when it was, but wasn't it a dad actually put poison or something in the candy?
In a pixie stick?
Yeah. And so that, like, started this whole thing. But it was like, it's freaking weird. So it's kind of like he was the candy man. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I remember he put it in a pixie stick and he killed I think he killed his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was, like, not, I don't think that had anything to do with, like, Halloween. But people always attach these kinds of things to it.
Yeah, that was, like, the only thing. I do remember the razor blades, but I think that's, like, right at the end, tail end of when I would trick-or-treat, like, 12 or 13, I think. Mm-hmm. That's about when I also stopped trick-or-treating, and I think that that's when, like, became more aware and people were more nervous. But in the 80s, it was a free-for-all, so.
So that was the story. And so this Halloween, if kids are trick-or-treating, I don't even know if they'll be trick-or-treating this year.
Who knows? Yeah, that might be a moot point.
Just,
like,
just walk by my house and I'll just toss candy at you.
I'm wearing gloves. I'll wipe it down.
I'll just put on a mask, like a legit Halloween mask. Everyone should just wear Halloween masks this year. Don't take them off. Just put on the mask. I'll chuck candy at you from my driveway. Like, just let me see your costume. Throw it.
Looking cute.
You got to catch it. You get more candy if you could catch it in your little bag as I throw it.
This year has been the worst. It's so crazy.
I know. But, yeah, so another reason, again, guys, let's Let's get out there and vote. Yep. Put some education back in the White House, please. Yes. Let's do it so we can have Halloween back next year. Because, I mean, I'm still going to do my thing, which is, like, eating candy and watching scary movies.
And decorating
my house. And I'm still going to dress up and decorate my house. I know. I told John, I'm like, maybe we should just decorate now because it's practical. I mean, what the fuck does it matter? He was like, no. I was like, the skeletons are so cute. I'll have to take a picture of my decorated house and put it on the website. So. My skeletons are super cute. I go all out, man.
Halloween's my jam. You do. You love it. So we'll have to keep them posted so we know what you dress up as. I always thought you were going to do the sheriff like Linda one year.
Oh, yeah. The sheriff. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll do it this year. I'll just curl my hair and like get a leather jacket.
An Elise onesie. Something.
Last year I was just a giraffe because I have a giraffe onesie.
Yeah.
So that was a nice easy... While I was watching scary movies, I was just in my pajamas. And I would just put the little hood on when the kids would come to the door.
I was just like a country girl because I have like button-up like flannel shirts and boots, like cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really thought much into it since we can't really do anything, like have people over or go out and show off.
So sad.
Yeah. So sad. But yes. So now it is time for our super fun state facts.
And cities.
Ooh, I like that. You went you went hard for that one. That was good. All right. I think you started last time.
Yeah, so I did.
Will start this time. Okay. So, my story took place in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and something really interesting I found about that was there is an author, I guess she's an artist too, but an author, Maureen Daly, who published a young adult novel called 17th Summer in 1942. The story took place in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And is noted, and the reason why it's so special is not just because the story is set in this town, but also because it is claim to fame is being one of the first adult literature books, and this is where that period of young adult literature is said to have started with this book. It's basically about a girl who is dating this boy and he falls in love with her, but she never really says it. But then she's going away to college in Chicago and he's moving to Oklahoma with his family. And it's just kind of about their relationship this summer of her 17th year. And the book was apparently very controversial for the time because, like I said, it was written in 1942 and about the 1940s. And the relationship between the main characters, Jack and Angie, is chaste, which means they're not like doing anything, but the novel does address the topic of sexuality and desire in a way that had not been done in a work of adolescent fiction before. It also portrayed underage drinking and smoking, both which were considered highly improper in the 1940s, and so it was really controversial, but it's the little claim to modern young adult fiction, which I love. I always like YA novels.
I read them all the time. I love them too.
Yeah.
So I don't like that they call them young adult. It's for everybody.
Yeah. Or we're just young adults still. I like that.
Sure.
I'm still a young adult.
Amber. Me too. Oh, yeah, me too. I'm not
30 yet. I can still read them.
That's
if I
right.
wanted to.
That's right. I'm also a young adult at heart.
There you go.
So, well, thank you. That's interesting. I'd never heard of her, and I've never read that book, and I love reading.
So it's still in publication, so you could always go check The 17th Summer is what it is called.
So my city was, I had to look, Oak Creek, Wisconsin, which is also a small town. Surprise, surprise, Amber picks a small town murder. So I was looking around, and the thing that I found most fun and interesting was in July, Oak Creek has what they call the Dog Days of Drexel. So it is a weekend that is just full of dog fun. So you can bring your dog, and the big attraction is that they have dog diving contests. So where, you know, like the dogs run and then like dive off of a pier into like water. And so they have times where they train, they'll train your dog to dive. So hopefully your dog swims. don't do it for certain dogs because certain dogs don't float.
Yeah, but it's like bulldogs and like French bull. They're too top heavy. Yeah, they can't float.
They're just like, come back.
They're just going to go down.
Yeah. So, but they do all this stuff. There's vendors. Just it's like a whole weekend of just dogs. And since Selena and I love dogs and we both own dogs, I was like, that would be so fun to just like have everything revolving around dogs for an entire weekend. So if you want to go, so they did have it this year, but it was in July. They did social distancing, apparently. I don't know what Wisconsin does, but so it happens every July. So look it up. So if you're ever going around Oak Creek in July, stop by the Dog Days of Drexel. And Drexel's, I think the town square is named that. So that's where it's at.
And then I also have
the state fact. So good old Wisconsin. So we're talking about it being the dairy state. So did you know that margarine was actually invented in 1869 in France? And apparently it had an effect on the dairy industry because margarine, as you know, does not use milk. So it doesn't use dairy. Mm-mm. So Wisconsin, in kind of a backlash because it probably affected their dairy industry, prohibited the sale and use of margarine starting in 1985, and it went all the way to 1967 in Wisconsin. You could not sell or use margarine. So
wait, what were the years again?
From 1895 to 1967. So
you said 1995. I was like, what?
1895. Sorry. Thanks for correcting me.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah. So 18, you know, it's hard to say 1895. And then 1967, the ban was lifted, but there are still restrictions on margarine in Wisconsin today. So it's illegal for restaurants to serve their customers margarine in place of butter unless the customer specifically requests it.
I was gonna say, what about people who are lactose intolerant like or are allergic to dairy? Why don't they get to enjoy it? Jeez, so insecure, Wisconsin.
I know. Well, it just affected their industry, so they had to. But you can still request it, so but they can't just serve it. So it can't be like, this is the go-to. And I just think that's really funny. Yeah.
That is. So if we're ever in Wisconsin, I will make sure to ask for margarine.
Yeah. I'll be like, is this butter or margarine? Oh, can I have some margarine, please?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever asked for margarine, nor do I care. I just serve whatever they put on my table, I'll use. Whatever. It doesn't matter to me.
No. But just because Wisconsin was so insecure about it, it makes me want to do it.
So I just thought that was a fun fact about Wisconsin, especially since it's the dairy state.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that.
I always love weird laws in states. Like in Nebraska, you can still, I think it's still on the books that when you are released from prison, that you have a right to ask for a horse. So they'll give you a horse. Like, I don't know what would happen if somebody actually asked for that, but I'm pretty sure it was something I learned in my history class when I was in high school. So that was a long time ago. Yeah. Maybe they changed it, but I always like those kind of old timey laws that like, if they actually enforced or did anything about like what?
Yeah, that's weird.
And what was the like penalty if they caught you using margarine? And did they, like, people go to other states? Did they, like, drive down to Illinois and be like, I'm going to go quickly buy margarine and then have, like load it up in the car and, like, bootleg it back?
Black market margarine.
Ah, too funny.
The struggle is real. I wonder how they feel about alternative milks there. How is the oat milk, almond milk, soy milk industry of Wisconsin doing?
You would be run out of town, ma'am. Get out of here with that stuff. We're real milk people. With your oat milk
and your vegan cheese. Oh, Oh my goodness. So yeah, surprise, surprise, Wisconsin, also not a state I've been to. So.
Me either, but...
Oh, I just thought we fun. Go, we're only going for the dog festival.
Yeah, we're going for the dog days of Drexel and eating a shit ton of margarine while we do it. Yep. That's our plans.
Margarine
awesome.
On all the food.
All the foods, margarine. Although I do prefer butter.
Yeah, I don't really care. All right, guys. So thank you so much for listening. Again, just like before, remember, if you registered to vote and you filled out your census, one or the other, preferably both, give us a shout out. So either email us at stateofmurderpodcast@gmail.com, message us on Facebook, message us on Instagram, whatever you'd like to do, let us know and we will give you a shout out in the next episode. Also, too, we are still working on getting that interview that we did for Central Valley Talk. So as soon as we get that, we'll be posting it to the website. Also, make sure to like and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SOM Podcast. Check it out. We post some pretty cool stuff on there. So the artwork that Amber's brother works on and any updates we have on episodes. I know on the 8th was Amber's birthday. So thank you to everybody who wished her a happy birthday. Yes, even though we had to socially distance, I still brought her a present for her birthday.
So I drank some of it, so.
Was it good?
Of course. Gin and tonics are the best.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta drink.
I don't like them, but.
Hey, your husband does, so he obviously has great taste because he loves gin and tonics and he married you.
There you go. That's really it. It's just that he married me. Yeah. He has good taste. We're still working on his alcohol preferences. although he does really like tequila, so that's okay. Huh? Yep, so make sure you like and follow us on all the things. Thank you guys for listening. Next week, we're in Illinois, right?
Illinois.
Under Wisconsin? Yeah, yep. Illinois. The home of the Bears.
The Bears and the
that's
Bulls
probably my next
and Ditka.
Accent. And Ditka.
Ditka.
I'm not a Chicago Bears fan. A lot of my family are Chicago Bears fans, though. I know. Gross.
And but... I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm a White Sox fan.
Yeah, I'm just not a baseball fan, so yuck on all of it.
I know. Well, one time Selena also, really asked me like how many innings. Do you remember when you asked me how many innings were in a baseball game? I was like, is that a serious question?
Why does this game go on forever? I hate that it has no time limit, that it just goes and goes and goes. Like, you could be in a game for hours. It just it doesn't end.
Yeah.
It's annoying. I don't like it. Nope. So. I also don't like Chicago. I don't like Chicago's hockey team. I don't like the Blackhawks. So.
Oh, I was like, I couldn't even name what their hockey team is.
It's the Blackhawks. Yeah. I think they're in the playoffs right now. I don't know. Oh. They kind of
I didn't even know that was NHL was going on right now.
Yeah, they did, like, this random, like, okay, this is where the season kind of ended. So these are the teams that we're going to put in there. And so they're playing right now. I think John was showing me whatever game was today or yesterday, I think. I think it was Tampa Bay Lightning and somebody else. But they went 5 overtimes. Because you can't, for random fact for hockey playoffs, you can't win in a shootout. So normally in a hockey game, you do. I want to say you do 2 overtimes and then it goes to a shootout. But in playoffs, you can't win a game through a shootout. So you just keep playing overtimes until somebody scores.
Oh,
and
shit.
They played 5 before. Dang. And I don't know. I didn't even look at who won. I think it might have been Tampa Bay. I don't remember. But yeah, that's crazy. Because I've been at a hockey game where we played a few overtimes. It was pretty chill. You're just like, what's going to happen? We're just going to be here forever.
Well, maybe I'll start watching hockey now that Seattle has a hockey team. Well, once they have a hockey team.
Oh, yeah. They do. They officially announced the name.
The Seattle Kraken.
Ugh. The Kraken.
It's so stupid. Their logo is awful.
I know. They named it the Kraken. I was like, not like the Krakens. I was like, what's the plural of Kraken? Is it Krakai? Like, what is it? Like,
why weren't they named Kraken? The Seattle Sea Serpents? Like, it's the same fucking thing almost, and it made more sense. Yeah. Fucking Kraken.
Yeah, it doesn't sound as good.
I think it does.
You can't
just
put C in the front of all of Seattle's teams.
I know.
I go, why don't they just...
That's just one. The Seattle Seahawks. That's the only one.
Oh that's right. Your baseball team's the Mariners.
Yep. So, and then
do they have a basketball team?
No, we did. The Seattle Supersonics. But they're gone. They went to Oklahoma City. I don't like to talk about that. That makes me bitter. I stopped watching basketball just because of that. I was like, basketball, fuck you, basketball. No, no fucking Seattle team. Fuck you.
Yeah, but now you got a hockey team. But no, hockey's interesting. I like hockey because it's kind of fast. It's fast, but it's like also very physical, like football, which I like. I like watching people hit people. I know it's really bad, but I really... Also, in the hockey, they're allowed to fight sometimes, and I also like that because I'm like, yeah, let them fucking go at it then.
I'm telling you, hockey doesn't make any sense to me because high-sticking is all the time, but they never fucking call it. I don't fucking understand.
There's like a sweet spot, so it's not all high-sticking.
They're flinging the thing around, and it's like, no, I don't get it. That's why I don't like soccer either. I'm like, I don't understand offsides. If I don't understand a game and its fucking rules, I'm not going to watch it. Because I swear people are offsides all the fucking time and they never call it. And I'm like, oh, what's a sport?
Oh my God. Okay. So next season for hockey, when Seattle has a team and they're playing, you're going to come over and we'll watch it. And me and John will explain the rules to you.
Deal.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to all of our side tangents this episode. We will see you next week in Chicago. Again, don't forget, register to vote, fill out your census, super important. If you want us to stop bugging you about it, then send us a message, let us know you've done it, and we'll keep chatting out until we hit everybody.
That's right.
So, all right, guys, have a good night, day, whatever time it is where you're at. Yep. Bye.
Bye.